Okay, thank you for your patience. We are trying to record this in addition to actually having the mics. That's with the additional, we're going to have to be switching that back and forth. But yes, it's a great pleasure to talk to you today, and just want to share a little bit more about who we are. And sort of, we've been on a personal of a journey over several years. Laurie and I met back in 1994 when we both were in Russia as missionaries, just coming out of college. And have been through many experiences, and we'll share those with you today. And our whole lives, we were pretty much nature lovers, people who like to get outside, people who like to do things, and really had an appreciation, for creation in general. But through the years, through some of the experiences that we've had, and through our own study of the scriptures, have really begun to see it as something more than something that we just like, but that caring for creation is something that God actually has uniquely called us to do individually and calls all Christians to do. And just a little bit about our background. As Joseph mentioned, we have worked overseas as missionaries in several different countries. I've been involved in a lot of development work, community development, microfinance, giving small business loans to, in areas of poverty, a lot of work in South America, Africa. And through those experiences have come to even become more convinced that ignoring the environmental condition of people's lives, the situation where they exist, we can't really have true development, true progress, and that the environment is a genuine window into how we can serve one another and grow in our relationship with God. So for today, we're just going to kind of go through three parts, basically. The first part, which I think mainly Laurie is going to share a little bit, which is just a little bit of our story and why we personally have come to care a lot about this particular issue. Second, our study. After we began to have some experiences, began to really go back to the scriptures and to study in a deeper, detailed way on this particular issue. And I was very surprised at how, at wondering how I had missed the message of caring for creation for so many years. And then we'll talk a little bit about the steps that we've taken in our lives and in the lives of our community and in our church for how we have tried to live out the call to care for creation. So I'm just gonna invite Laurie to come forward and share a little bit.
Okay, as Mark said, my name is Laurie, and I'm so excited to be here, and I thank you for giving your time to this topic today. And this is something that Mark and I are not experts. We don't have environmental studies degrees. We don't have a lot of experience for years and years of study into this topic, but it's something that God has burdened on our heart over the past 10 years, and it's something that has evolved, and it's something that the level of it has gotten deeper and deeper as God has revealed to us and showed us that this is not just something that's a political agenda, but this is something that's very important to Him, because what happens with creation affects everyone. It affects the animals which God created, the trees, the plants. But it's not like you're a tree hugger if you care about it, because what we do with creation also affects people. And what happens with the environment also will affect what happens to the poor. And unfortunately, a lot of the poorer countries are the ones who get the brunt of it right now. But just to kind of give you a little background of how God used this to open our eyes and burden us for it was right after Mark and I were married, we moved to Santiago, Chile. And we were missionaries there working with college students. And it was a beautiful, beautiful city. And the landscape of Santiago, on your west, you have the coastal range mountains. And on your right, you have the beautiful Andes. But because of weather patterns, a lot of times what would happen is that the way the wind will blow the ceiling, it would have a ceiling effect. And see, as you can see here, there's the clouds and everything would hold the pollution in. And as you look down there at the bottom, you'll see how brown it was. And a lot of it's not just weather patterns, but the bulk of it had to do with the buses. They had these buses that would just blow black smoke out. There were cars. Just lifestyle, but it's nothing worse than what we do in America. It's just because of their landscape, it really was worse. And so, you know, and I remember, you know, there were times my lungs would just burn. And it was just like, oh gosh, I can't handle this anymore. We go outside for a walk and then you just get this burning sensation inside your lungs. And people, missionaries who've been there a while, say, oh, you'll get used to it. But then we heard a statistic that said the pollution there would, you know, just walking on the street daily was equal to smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day. And then I was like, you know, we were always, you know, not that we're like health freaks, but we were also, you know, we like to exercise, we like to get out, you know, we try to eat healthy, but, you know, and so in this, when hearing that, I'm like, oh my word, this is really affecting my health. But then it's also one of those things, God's called me to this country, I'm going to endure this and so forth. But then I got pregnant. And then while I was there, I had the baby and all my friends were, don't take the baby outside. And then Noah was born in April, which is right as, in Chile, is right as they were entering their winter, and the winter months were the worst with the pollution. And you know, I was, you know, I married older, and then I would wait for a long time to have a baby, and so when I had my baby, I'm like, I want to go outside and push the stroller and be a mom, and I was just ready to get out and enjoy being a mom. And then I'm like, God, that's silly. And you know, when we lived in Russia, the babies took naps outside in the middle of winter. I'm like, I'm going to take my baby outside. Took Noah outside for a walk, and then the very next day he woke up with a very deep chest infection. And what it was, that his lungs were too immature to handle the pollution. And when that happened, we were like, oh my word, this is really serious stuff. You know, for the Chileans who grew up with this, it's not fair to their children to be born and live in that condition, and they're unable to get out and play. They're unable to do so many things which we consider a good quality of life, and it's just not fair. But then again, it's, you know, this is the beginning of our journey, and we, you know, didn't have any real burden, but, you know, we're just disturbed by it. And so then we went home and, you know, enjoyed, you know, we went out to Oregon where Mark's family was, where the air was a lot cleaner, and then we started noticing a lot of the green that people in Oregon were doing. We're like, huh, too bad, you know, this is not going on in Santiago. But still, at that point, it was not quite that much of a burden to us. Well, then God changed our direction, and he sent us to Munich, Germany. And, you know, in Germany, they are very good about being environmentally conscious, but at the same time, a lot of their buildings are old, and a lot of the way things were built. And so while we were there, we were renting out an old apartment, and right where our bed was, against the wall, this mold was growing up the wall. Now, this is not actually a picture of our apartment, but this is what it looked like, and actually our wall was worse, but you couldn't see it because it was behind the bed. And then the Germans say, you never ever push your furniture up against the wall, but you know, we didn't know that. And then, but the sad thing was I had another baby while I was in Germany, and then, and we had her crib right next to our bed, and her bed being right next to that mold, all of a sudden I started noticing she was having problems breathing, and I was having problems, and I'm not asthmatic, but I started feeling asthmatic, and I was, you know, having trouble in shortness of breath and so forth. And then the Germans freaked out. They're like, oh no, this is called Schimmel, and this is very dangerous, and you did not want to be breathing this, and you do not want your child. But the only way to get rid of it was using this very, very strong chemical substance on it. And the chemicals itself, like it was stripping the lining of our nasal passages, and our lungs were burning. And then again, we're like, everywhere we go, whether it be like a, you know, a developing country or, you know, developed country, we started noticing that there's patterns with the quality of our life and the way we were feeling that were starting to be affected over and over. And then again, the Germans do a wonderful job of being environmentally conscious, but something was still wrong with the building of their structure of building. Then when we came home, you know, we learned so much from the Germans. The Germans recycle everything, and not just in their home, but on the streets. As you can see, they would have stuff, they had the Restmüll, which is like the normal trash, but then they had paper, then packaging, and plastic, and glass. And, you know, at first, this was very annoying to me. I mean, I was like, oh gosh. And it was required by the government. Like, everyone's supposed to recycle, and you're supposed to break them down into at least that many bins. And you even had a compost one. And at first, it was very annoying. It interrupted my schedule. It was hard being like a new mother and doing all this stuff. But then after a while, you develop a system and it becomes a part of your life. And then I didn't think about it anymore. But then we came home and I went to go visit my mother in Virginia. And that was kind of like what her trash can looked like. I mean, just threw everything away. She threw plastics, and, you know, and then we kind of had the struggle of like, why do you throw this away? And then, like, you know, not to be judgmental. And I think the problem that we struggled with coming home was being judgmental, which I don't believe is not of God, because, you know, all that does is separate and divide instead of bring others to what we had learned. And so the problem then is we were trying to figure out how can we change things the way we live in America, but without making others feel separated from us, because we had a very unique opportunity of living overseas and having learning from the Germans and from the Chileans and everyone else. And then we also noticed the transportation. It was like, you know, it was another problem. It was like, you know, my girlfriend would drive her car, you know, 2 blocks to come visit me, but then in Germany, you know, businessmen would ride their bikes, you know, 2 miles to get to the train station. And it was this kind of a lot of little things that made me realize how much, you know, we were wasting. And the same thing with our packaging. The Germans had this drink system to where you buy these bottles, but all be glass, and then you take it to they call it a Getränk mark, which is like a mark, and then like they refill you return your water bottles or your colas or whatever, or your beer, whatever it is they're drinking, and then you get a full crate of it and bring it home, and then they would take it to be cleaned and reused. So anyway, so during all this time, we started realizing, you know, this is, you know, is this something that is a political agenda, or is this something that God wanted us to do? So as we came home, we started praying about, Lord, we feel like you gave us all these opportunities for a reason, and what are we supposed to do with it? And so then we began praying and we began studying, and then it was amazing what we saw in the Bible as we started doing that. And Mark, you know, has a lot of background. He has a Master of Divinity, and he studied a lot with texts and original languages, and so he started coming up with part of our study. So he's going to share this about 7 major reasons why we should care as Christians.
Yeah, so one of the things that that during this process of these experiences that we had in Chile and Germany, I really began to see that the environment, I had always kind of thought of this very big, global sort of thing, and I started to realize that there's a lot of different layers to what it really means that the environment is. I mean, there is the near city sort of issue of what your environment is. So in Santiago, where there was the pollution, that was a very regional or local problem. But then there's also even the issue of your actual place of living, so very, very small. So in other words, it's not just the whole world, which it is, but it keeps coming down into these sort of regional, local, and even your home. All of those things are part of the environment. And like what Laurie was mentioning, in Germany, they are astounding. They recycle almost 80% of what they do, which is the highest levels in the world. But because of the older buildings, because they were not constructed in environmentally healthy ways, we had the mold problem, had serious respiratory issues, and we also had to use the cleaning agents, which were actually very unhealthy. And one of the things that happened at one point was our 2-year-old daughter actually swallowed one of the cleaning agents that we did, and had third-degree burns through her into her stomach, actually. And she was swollen, and you can imagine she was in an emergency situation, and we actually, you know, part of me kind of wondered whether she was going to make it. And it was sort of in that moment when I realized how ridiculous it was that we were having to you know, clean our homes with products that could kill our children. And really began to seriously question sort of just the way we were doing things. And so that's when it really began to start to study the Bible in a more intensive way on this issue. And if you go to the bookstore and you look up secular texts, they'll almost always start with the first chapter being the impending environmental crisis. And that is what is their motivation. That's what they use to motivate you to respond. And in a real way, I understand why that is, because in our own lives, it was something of a crisis that prompted us to actually take that very seriously. But as we say here on the slide, I really believe that our motivation should not come from whatever crisis is existing or may happen or whatever. Our foundation should come from the scriptures. So wherever we are, whatever we do, our response should be determined by what the scriptures say. So in that, I'd like for us to kind of dig through these seven reasons that there are definitely more than these seven, but these are seven that have kind of come out to us. And we have about 10 scriptures to read that relate to those seven. So I'm going to look for 10 volunteers. I don't know, did everyone show up with their Bibles? Okay, we got one volunteer. Thank you. I'm going to have you read Genesis 1:28 and 1:22. I'm going to come back to you later and tell you when to read it. But okay, we got another volunteer. Okay. I'll get her, I guess. Matthew 22:37 through 39. New Matthew 25:34 through 40. Okay, her way back there. Romans 8:22. I got another one over here. Genesis 3:17. Okay, Matthew 7:9 through 10. Right there. Okay, Matthew 7:9 through 10. Okay, we're still looking. Romans 1:20. Okay, we're back there. Psalm 19:1. Okay, we still got way back in the back there. 1 Corinthians 9:19 through 23. Two more. Okay, Acts 17:22 through 23. Actually, now I got two more. Romans 8:21. And then one more. One more. We're in the back. Colossians 1:19 through 20. And again, I'll let you know when to read, so if you can go ahead and get started. But locate it. The first reason that we should care for creation is that it is a reflection of our love for God. Now, why do I say that? As we see in the Bible. Now, how does the Bible start off? Anyone volunteers? What's the first chapter of the Bible about? Creation. Okay. And then, at what point is it that God creates Adam and Eve? Anyone remember? Process of creation. On which day is it? Sixth day. Okay, great. So on the sixth day, God creates Adam and Eve. And after he creates Adam and Eve, he kind of has them before him, and he tells them two things to do. Does anyone remember what those two things are? More or less. He said, fill up the earth, be fruitful and multiply, and then to rule over creation. So I'm going to ask you to read Genesis 1:28, and then I'm going to talk about it and we'll come back.
I said unto them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the air, and over every...
So you get that? So basically that is that's the original commission, if you will, from God to Adam and Eve. It tells them to rule over the earth and over all the creatures. Now, throughout history, that verse has actually been used a lot to explain why humans have dominion over the earth and why humans can sort of do whatever it is they think they should be able to do and need to do with the creation. So, in other words, God gave it to us. It's ours to do as we please. Now, does anyone have any reason why you think that may not be the best interpretation of that verse? Sounds like a reason to exploit it. Exactly. It sounds like a reason to exploit it, but is it a reason to exploit it?
Yeah.
It is a reason to. So one of the, that verse sounds very much like it, rule over. It kind of carries this connotation like you can sort of exploit it. You can kind of do whatever you want. Now I want to ask you to read Genesis 1:22. I think you had both of them, right? Yep.
And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill
and
multiply in the earth.
I don't know if you could... that is the first blessing from God in the Bible. And what's so interesting about that blessing is that blessing happens six verses before the one we just read about rule over the earth. and it happens at the end of the fifth day. So the first blessing from God in the Bible is for all non-human creation. So in other words, that blessing that he just read for multiplication was for all the animals that God had created at that point to grow and to multiply and to be blessed. Now, so what's so interesting about this is that six verses later, when we have humans are created and then are given this commission to rule over the earth and the seas, does it seem logical that that commissioning could immediately contradict or counteract the blessing that had occurred the day before, six verses before? So in other words, the point of those two verses are that you have to, when it says to rule over the fish and the seas of the world, it has to be read in the context of the blessing that came before, literally just six verses before, but was the first blessing in the entire Bible, which is for all non-human creation. So in other words, when God gave us that commissioning or that call to rule over the earth and the seas and the fish and the animals, it has to mean that we are therefore responsible to ensure their prosperity and multiplication as he prayed or as he blessed them for just six verses before. So the fact is that when God calls us, and this is, again, I think the magnitude of Genesis 1 is that these are the first things that God says, the first things that are recorded in Scripture. And so those carry a certain weight that deserve to be considered quite seriously. And so that when God calls us to rule over the fish and the seas, it is in a way that we ensure their blessing. So which is why I say, first and foremost, the reason we should care for creation is because it is an expression of our love to God. And it's fulfillment of that original calling he has on our lives. So in the whole sort of creation, environmental debate, the issues, the other thing that you'll have a lot of is, so now are you saying that animals or creation or the environment is therefore more important than human beings? Which comes to the second reason why I think that we should care for creation. Because caring for creation is an actual way for us to love our neighbor. And now I'm just gonna pause now. We're gonna read these two verses, and I'm gonna kind of come back to this. Matthew 22:37-39. Yes, thank you.
Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment."
Maybe through verse 40 then.
And the second is like, "Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments."
There you go. Great. So, I mean, those are obviously very, very famous verses, but they're worth sort of revisiting here in our context to realize that that also carries enormous weight when Jesus says that all the law and the prophets hang upon these two commandments. And these two commandments are to love God and to love neighbor. So when we're saying that caring for creation is a way to fulfill the loving of God and loving of neighbor, all of a sudden the entire, I think the dynamics of the whole conversation have shifted from what sort of priority we should give it. Now I'm going to go to the next verse, Matthew 25:34-40. Great.
"Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance in the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. And you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. Then you see a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes, you sit or in prison and go to visit you."
Again, the reason why I wanted to read that verse, I thought it was very interesting because, you know, there are several things that that passage uses that that people can do unto the least of these: visit people in prison, provide them with food, provide them with clothing, and provide the thirsty with drink. And one of the things that has always kind of slipped past me for many years was how intricately connected actually the environment was with all of the things that human beings needed. For example, who breathes air? We do. So if the air is polluted, we are immediately and directly affected by that. And who drinks water? We do. And if the water is unavailable or dirty or polluted, we suffer. And as this photo shows, you know, there's a lot of water out there that has been polluted directly because of human activity. And now for most of us, if you have lived the majority of your life or all of your life in a highly developed country where clean water was not a big of an issue, it can almost feel like the environment is something separate from your day-to-day existence. But the fact of the matter is, we are all fully and completely dependent upon the environment for our own lives. But sometimes it's helpful, I think, to kind of, if you've had an experience where you were denied some of the things that you did, you got on a regular basis. And the fact is that most of us don't really know what it's like to live without clean water. And so you therefore don't realize how dependent you are upon it. And Laurie had an experience where she didn't have access to clean water. And I'm going to invite her to come up and share about that story. And I think just through her story, you can begin to see a little bit about how important it is, how much caring for the environment has a direct relationship to the quality of people's lives.
Well, back in 94, there's a thing, organization called the Commission. And what that was about 60 to 80 different Christian organizations who pooled all their resources together. And this was shortly after the fall of communism in the former Soviet Union. And so what their Ministry of Education had invited Christians from America to come and work in their school system, because what had happened was when all this Western influence started going into their country, their children started rebelling, and they were faced with things they had never been faced with before. And so they were hoping that we would come in, teach some Christian ethics and morality based upon the Bible, and this would help give the teachers a tool to use to kind of help bring their kids back in and give them some direction in their life. And so when this opportunity came around, I was real excited. I was single at the time. Mark did the same trip, and we were on two different teams. And I was located in a town called Kislevsk, which is way down in southern Russia. It's right in the foothills of the Caucasus Mountains, and it's not too far from Chechnya. It's probably, if you did a straight shot, it was probably about 100 miles. But you would have to travel the mountain roads, which would take a little bit longer. So as we were training with the organization that was sending us, they told us, you know, the number one reason people come home is conflict with other missionaries. And then the second reason people come home early is because they can't handle the living conditions of the country. And so since this was so not too long, it's only a few years since the country had opened up, the infrastructure at Russia at that time was still very behind, and they were lagging in many ways. And so what they did, they took us through this intense training, and they prepared us mentally and emotionally about what we're about to be faced with, how we would be living, and some of the things that we face on our daily life. And one of the things they did say was that you're not going to be guaranteed of having hot water daily. And they said most of the time you'll have water, but every now and then the water will be shut off for, no one really knew why, but it'll just be shut off. And so we kind of went thinking, okay, yeah, and, you know, we were young and we were like about your age, and we're like, yeah, we can handle this. This will be cool. This will be fun. This will be an adventure. And so when we got to our city, sure enough, probably about a month or two within living in the country, you know, hot water was gone for a while. And, you know, we wrote home like, hey, we lived without hot water today. Aren't we tough? And everyone's, oh, no, no hot water. Oh, you poor thing. And then the thing is that the hot water, I mean, when the cold water was very, very cold. I don't know why, it was like frigid cold. And when you did wash your hair, you get this horrible headache. And so we were like thinking, oh, this is what it's like to live without hot water. Well, then we had our day where there was no water, and it was only for an hour or two. And it was a, you know, big inconvenience for us because you can't wash your hands, you can't flush your toilet, and then you just kind of come up with different things to do. Well, then we came where we had one day with no water at all. And our neighbor, three floors down, was like, oh, this is Russia, this happens. And what you need to do is buy some plastic containers that you can seal, keep them on your back porch, and then when the water disappears, you just live off that water. You use it to flush your toilet, you use it to cook, to clean, and so forth. And so we did that, and we're like, okay, we wrote more letters home saying, look what we're doing, we're living like the Russians, we're kind of, proud of ourselves because we could go a day without water. Well, then the water started disappearing more and more, and we were not quite sure what was going on. And then it turned out that our town, it was small town, and where it was located, there's no pipes bringing water in, and all of our water was completely dependent on this reservoir, which is on the outskirts of town. And our town, because of its location, the rain clouds hardly ever came in because of the mountains. And so we bragged about having 300 and so many days a year of sun, but that sun also meant there was no rain. And then there was a drought that was hitting the area. And so as the water began to dry up, the authorities of the city realized they're going to have to start limiting what we could have. And so then what happened is that one day went to 2 days, and then 2 days went to 3 days. So then it got to where we would have water every third day, but the problem was we only had it for 45 minutes. And then we lived on the fourth floor, and because the amount of water they had was so small that the water pressure was not strong enough to get the water to my apartment. So then what we would do is we'd take buckets and we'd go down to our neighbors who lived on the first floor, and they would let it go run nonstop, and we'd fill our buckets and we'd walk back upstairs, and then we would put the water in our bathtub, and we kept it in our bathtub for the next 3 days, and we would live off that water. And we called it our Russian aerobics or step aerobics, because we kind of carried up the stairs and everything. And but then things started getting worse, and then I don't know if you remember back during this time, this is when the Russian government was bombing Chechnya, and this is when it first started, and they were doing massive airstrikes. And what happened was there was just dead bodies everywhere. And then, because they were just, the airstrikes were so intense, there was bodies laying in the rivers, there was bodies laying all over the place. And then I have a picture, which we didn't have with us, but it shows the reservoirs basically dried up. So what they had to do is bring in trucks of water from other cities. And then the authorities told us that this water can't be trusted because of the source of where it's coming from, because the waters were becoming polluted because of all the dead bodies laying in the rivers. And so so then what they told us we would have to do is that we'd have to boil the water for at least 10 minutes before using it. But when you boil water, it evaporates. And so what we'd boil would just be very limited. And so it took forever. First, we had to go to the truck, get the water in the bucket, climb upstairs, put it in the tub, and then we had to wash our clothes. So we got to the point where we just lived off of, two pairs of clothes a week. We would wear one pair, and then when we had the water, we'd do the washing machine, and we'd have to manually pour the water into the washing machine and watch it to make sure when it changed cycles, we could put more water in it to where it rinsed and so forth. And so then we had to wash dishes. But when we didn't have time to wash dishes because we're doing all this other stuff. And then so in order to keep from having dishes, we basically lived off bread and cheese because we didn't want to have dishes. We couldn't cook. And when you don't eat healthy food, you don't have energy. And when you don't have water to drink, you're dehydrated. And so when you aren't eating healthy and you aren't drinking water, you're tired. And so then when you're tired, you don't feel like, being productive. And then so then it's like the problem with cleaning. There's this germs everywhere because you just never could ever deep clean. And the toilet, I do not even want to go there, but we had this saying is that if it's brown, wash it down. If it's yellow, let it mellow. And it's just kind of like you have to come up with ways, and there's a stench in the air. Because what happened is all our apartment, all the pipelines are on top of each other. So what your neighbor does affects you and so forth. And it was just kind of like everyone had to work together to survive. And then it's just kind of like, there's like a little old lady across the hall, and then she can't go down there. And so then you're helping your neighbor. So in a way, it bonded the community. But the same way, it's just like your whole existence is based upon finding water. And so then, we were there for 2 years. And so it wasn't like something that I had to live with it day in, day out. But it's like, how can you expect a country to develop in advance when their whole purpose of life is finding water? And then the thing is that not only did we have water 45 minutes every third day, but it wasn't clean. So what good is having water if it's not clean? And then you start thinking about all of our brothers and sisters who are in places like Africa where they have to walk miles daily to get their water. And then they get a bucket of dirty water. And so then all this is really showed me is like what we do with our water and how we treat stuff in the environment affects those around us in ways that we can't even imagine unless you live it. And so this was, I think, you know, this was a very hard time, and it was a very draining time, but I think God really used it to open my eyes and have compassion on what people have to live with daily. Oh yeah, I forgot one more part of the story. Well, as the, you know, this is getting near the end of my term, and I started having abdominal pains. And I didn't know what it was, and people were like, oh, it's the stress, it's this, it's that, it's because you're not eating healthy. But I'm like, no, something's weird, it's different. It only happened at certain times. And it kind of started getting worse and worse. And then 2 weeks before I was supposed to come home, I woke up in the middle of the night and I had this very sharp pain in my lower right region. And I had this, you know, I was having, my body was just shaking because my fever had jumped so high and I didn't know what it was. And we had this book, it's called Where There Is No Doctor, and I looked it up and it said I had appendicitis. So we went downstairs to the same neighbor, the neighbors that we just depended on so much. And she's like, oh, you have to call the hospital and they come check you out first before you go. So she helped and she acted as a translator and everything. And so then as we went, they had to, you know, do all this stuff. And they couldn't, my insurance required that I'd be flown out of the country. But because the war was going on with Chechnya, we were considered a war zone because we were so nearby. And so they couldn't get permission to land a plane to get me and take me to Sweden. And so then what happened was they said, you know, the doctors like said she does not have time. She's going to have the operation here. So while all the battles of the insurance and, you know, are they going to allow me to have an operation, it's a very small hospital and the equipment was very archaic. I was in the fetal position because that's the only place I could find comfort, and I'm facing the wall. And I noticed on the wall, it's just splattered with stuff. I don't know, it was like, it looked like dry blood, it looked like dry body fluids. And then at the same time, I got this anxiety and this fear of me. I'm like, the hospital's not clean. And I'm like, you know, how can you sterilize a hospital when you don't have water? And it just kind of started showing me the different layers of what, you know, of not having clean water, of whether it be, you know, children getting diarrhea because the bottle that has the formula is made with dirty water, and is this the bottle that's going to kill your child? You know, or, you know, you go in for emergency surgery and you get a bad infection just because they can't clean the hospital, not due to lack of responsibility, because lack of water. So.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the moral of that story is if you find that you don't have water, just go to a different country. But also, it shows that if we are completely dependent upon the environment, and without caring for our environment, humans are the ones who are going to suffer, along with the rest of creation. But humans are going to suffer as well. So, moving along to our next reason here, which is Romans. If I could get someone to read Romans 8:22, where was that? Now, did I ask someone to get Genesis 3:17? Okay, good. So there, that Genesis 3:17, that's the verse, you know, after the fall, God basically says that the earth is cursed. And then in the Romans 8:22 verse, we have, it says that creation is groaning, as in the pains of childbirth. And so a lot of, you know, through the years, a lot of Christians have kind of said, well, the groaning of the earth is inevitable. The pains of the earth are inevitable, because it's all a reflection of the curse. And that, therefore, it's just sort of something we just kind of have to let it kind of, you know, take its path and let it be, and that's just the way it is. But I find it very interesting that that the passage in Romans 8:22 that she just read, it talks about the groaning of the earth in comparison to the pains of childbirth. And now after my wife gave birth twice, and both times she had labor of 30 plus hours. and both times she had to have C-sections because the child wasn't coming out. But both times in those situations, I could not remove the pain that she was going through. But I could help. And I could do whatever I could that could help. And I could, you know, I could massage her back. I could talk to her. I did whatever I could. You know, get the doctors to give her something, whatever it could to make the process a little better. And I think it's the same way when we look at the creation. If the creation is something that God is calling us to care for, which I believe He is, then we can't just say, well, it's going to groan, it's just the way it's going to be. Now, there is a certain truth to that. In the same way, childbirth is going to have some pains, but it doesn't mean you don't at all try to make it less than it is. And so the whole effect also of the creation, groaning, there's a lot of senses of where this is where the controversy around global warming or whatever. One of the big things is that we're dealing with today is, you know, how bad really is creation groaning? Is it groaning so bad that the Earth is heating up, the water is going to rise, and it's going to change the whole planet in the way that many would predict according to global warming? So without even debating whether global warming is something that we should concern ourselves with or not, I think one of the things that is worth considering when you look at the global warming issue, all of the things that we are called to do in order to lessen the impact on the Earth and to lessen the rate of warming of the Earth all have secondary reasons why there would be valid things to consider as well. For example, coal. Coal is considered to be one of the primary drivers of global warming. But let's just say that's not true. Let's say it's not a driver of global warming. Well, there's still good reasons why we'd want to reduce our usage of coal for two reasons. One is actually the extraction costs of taking coal out of the earth have a lot of other effects. For example, in the Appalachian Mountains, they have to literally blow the mountaintops off and to go down into the mountains to extract the coal. So in other words, that is, they're immediately totally altering the landscape that God has created by removing the mountaintops. But in addition to that also, the water then does not come down the mountains in the same way, so it causes erosion and causes actually a lot of sediment buildup in the waterways of the Appalachian Mountains, which directly impacts the people living in the area. So regardless of whether or not coal heats up the earth, it's still something we want to reduce our consumption of. Same thing with oil. Oil is another considered primary driver of global warming and the fact that it's contributing to sort of this groaning of the earth. Well, let's just say that oil actually has no impact on the temperature of the earth. Well, there's still good reasons why we don't want to, we still want to reduce our usage of oil for the same reasons. The extraction costs are tremendous. We have to go into natural territories and extract those, and also oil causes a vast majority of the world to be dependent upon a very small and unstable part of the world, which is creates a very tremendous imbalance in terms of our human relationships with one another. So I think that you can see that I'm firmly convinced that the creation is groaning. I'm not a scientist, so I can't give an elaborate defense of global warming per se, but I have come to believe that every reason that we might want to restrict for global warming has other reasons why we want to do that as well. And so the Bible does say very clearly that the creation is groaning, and I think God is calling us to respond to that. Another reason is for our children and their children. The definition of environmental sustainability is this: to provide for the needs of this generation without doing harm to the next. What's so interesting to me about that is that seems like such a very basic definition. We get what we need without harming the next generation. Despite how basic and simple and straightforward that should be, it's actually very controversial. And a lot of people don't want to embrace environmental sustainability because they just want to think that we can be able to take what we need and the next generation will take care of itself. But I want to read one verse here. Who is my Matthew 7?
Bread, do you give them a stone instead? Or if they ask for a fish, do you give them a snake? Of course not.
That's Jesus talking. And now if our child asks for bread, we don't give him a stone. If he asks for, what was it, we don't give him a steak. So the point being there is very obvious, very logical when you have your own children and you have children that you even the pagans or whatever take care of their children. But somehow when it's one step removed, you know, it's years down the path, it's a lot more difficult to process those decisions in that way. One of the more interesting things is I did my my PhD in the field of intercultural studies, which means finding ways to analyze cultures and contrast them with one another. And there's sort of 14 categories that people use for doing that evaluation and that analysis. One of them is a culture long-term or short-term oriented. So for example, do they view far into the future or in the very near short term? Now, what is your guess for what the USA, where would the USA be in that kind of continuum?
Short term.
So the USA is actually quite short term. There are a few that are shorter, but the USA is very short term. And what's quite interesting is over the last 40 years, we've seen a tremendous shift to where all the cultures have kind of come down and become more short term. For example, Asian countries, particularly Japan and China, it was very, 40 years ago, it was assumed that when someone joined a company, that was the company they were going to work with forever. Businesses would actually write 40-year business plans. Now, with the intensification of technology and the rate of change, all of that is off the table. So even very long-term oriented cultures are actually becoming increasingly more short-term. One illustration of this for the USA culture is that in the early parts of this decade, when we had the real estate boom, Americans took out several $1 trillion in home equity that they did not use on their homes. So that's money in excess of income, several $1 trillion worth, and our net savings was zero. So in other words, we pulled out all of this extra wealth from our economy without saving a single collective dime, which means obviously we're very short-term oriented. And with this total shift in the global culture toward short-term oriented things, we have to remind ourselves that we are called to take care of our children and their children. The other thing I think is very interesting is I started to kind of look through the scriptures. I started to see that creation is mentioned several times in scripture as a way that people can come to know the truth of God. And so I want to read these two verses. I have these two verses read. Romans 1:20.
For in clearly see, being understood what has been made, so that men are without excuse.
Okay, and then Psalm 19:1. So there's two verses, and there's several others. I really like I like both of those verses. Romans 1 is actually the one he mentioned that where we can come to see God. It was actually the passage through which I became a Christian. I was 16 years old, and I was in a Bible study on Romans. And I was really questioning at that time whether God existed and how do we know God existed. And when I read that verse about, well, you see the creation and that's the way people can know that there's a God, I really began to realize, well, yeah, it is sort of undeniable that there has to be a God behind that. And through that verse is how I came to know the Lord. And I really think if we really view creation as a witness to God, you know, there's a lot of this, a lot of that is far beyond anything that we can reach and touch. But it makes us realize that what we do reach and touch, where we do have our impact and influence on, we should seek to preserve it in such a way that it continues to reflect the goodness of God to the best that it can. So creation is a genuine way that we see God for who He is. And so when we tarnish it, pollute it, destroy it, we tarnish its witness to God. One of the other things that for us has become very important, and Laurie's going to talk a little bit more about this later, but is that creation really, caring for creation really gives us common ground with other people who are not followers of Christ, who also care about these issues, and allow us to build a bridge to them, to share with them so they can see and come to know a Christ that they otherwise would not be able to come to know. And the fact of the matter is that throughout the New Testament, if you see, especially in the life of Paul, you see great attention being put toward finding this common ground with others in such a way that he could reach them with the gospel of Christ. And so I want to have these two verses read, which I believe illustrate that quite clearly. The first one is 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 23. Where was that? 1 Corinthians 9. Maybe we lost our 1 Corinthians. Can I get another volunteer for 1 Corinthians 9? And you can look it up while we go to the next verse. Okay. We'll get you in 1 Corinthians 9. Who was Acts 17? Acts 17, 22 and 23? So that's the passage in Acts when Paul is addressing a group of people in Athens. And, you know, he has very little in common with these guys. But he goes around and he finds the thing that he finds in common with them is that they are seeking and looking after God. And he drills down to that. So he finds the little thing that they have in common, and he talks about that, and then he preaches about the gospel from that. And you'll see that he lays this out quite clearly in the 1 Corinthians 9 passage, if we could read that now.
For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all. I have made more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew, in order to win the Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To win the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessing. Do you not know that in a race all runners compete, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it.
Yeah, so there I think you see Paul laying out quite clearly what his sort of missionary strategy and approach was, is to become all things to all people, which is basically a shorthand for saying find common ground with people, share that common ground, and use it as a bridge to sharing the gospel. And I really believe that caring for creation, because of the unique focus that people all over the country, all over the world, are giving to the environment, it provides us sort of a unique and strategic opportunity, if we were to fully embrace it, that we could develop relationships with these people with the end goal that they would then have a relationship with Christ. So our seventh and last one is that salvation is really for all of creation. And I'm going to read a couple of verses and then I'll have those read, rather, and then we'll talk just briefly about that. Romans 8:21. Was over here. Yep, there we go. Yep. And then Colossians 1, 19 and 20.
The fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself.
And so I think both of these verses, the reason why I want to have those read is the first one, you see that it says creation is longing for its day of liberation. And the second one is through Christ comes the reconciliation of all things. And now the reconciliation of all things is bigger than the reconciliation of people. And it's not at all to say that to deny the significance and importance of human beings in the process of reconciliation, and that Christ came so that whoever may believe in him should have eternal life. But it's to say that there is a bigger story going on in the scriptures that's quite clear. It's quite interesting. I wrote an article on this at one point, and about these seven reasons, and the only one that got any sort of negative feedback was this point. And it was the point where I had actually, I felt like, the clearest scriptures that I could point to make my point. But it's so contrary to, I think, the way that we have ingrained ourselves that it still provokes a little bit of a negative emotional reaction for a lot of people to think that God is doing something that's bigger than just us. And I would really want to just encourage you as you go forward to think a little bit about if creation is longing for a day of liberation, if Christ came for the reconciliation of all things, that alters a lot about the way we then view creation. In other words, it's not something that is just going to end up being destroyed in the end, but it's something that's going to end up being refined in the end, and that we can be a part of that process of the refining of creation, and we can be an agent that God uses for that or not. And so that's it's a totally different perspective when we're looking at it that way versus the earth is just something that will then ultimately be destroyed and useless. So just here, we just have a few more minutes, and I'm going to ask Laurie to come forward and just talk a little bit about some of the practical ways we have then gone from these biblical principles, if you will, into real life.
Okay, we're not going to go on this too much because I know a lot of the stuff most of you have already heard. There's so many things you can get, so many ideas on the internet now, on books in the bookstore. I know like Ben Lowe has his book, The Green Revolution, here in the bookstore. And there's all these different things where you can kind of get information from other people. But one thing that when we did get home and we did, you know, come to this conclusion that this is of God and this is something that Mark and I and our family are supposed to do, and like we cannot necessarily ask others to do things unless we're about to do it ourselves. So we came to the conclusion we had to have a commitment, and our commitment was to start with at home. It's like, you know, the Michael Jackson song, "I'm starting with the man in the mirror." That's what we had to do. We had to look at what we were doing. We had to look at our home. What could we do at home? What could we improve with what we were doing? Like little things from caulking the windows or from the way we did our trash. And I looked at our lifestyle. Like, what were we eating? Like, what were we throwing away? What were we consuming? And then I started looking at, like, we just consume so much. And then, like, you know, we would buy, you know, the water bottles. We would, you know, send my kids to school that would pack their lunch boxes with these little, you know, juice boxes they could throw away instead of buying a thermos. There's just little tiny things that I could change, you know, buy a plastic container instead of sending the food in Ziploc. So many things that we're just throwing away. And the funny thing is as we start doing that, you know, for those who do have kids, they would see the changes and they would get excited. And now they always ask, is this good for the earth? And so it's kind of like, you know, if we start making these small changes, the next generation, is this going to become life for them? It's not a change they have to make, it's just the way life is. And again, you know, we're still on a journey and we're only in the beginning and we still have a long ways to go at our house. And it is costly. You know, there's some, I mean, I would like to replace every window in my house right now, but I can't. We can't afford it, you know. So we just, you know, start, you know, baby steps and do it one at a time. And you, that's what you do. You just have to look at your financial situation, look at the things you can do bit by bit. But then as we, you know, focused on our home, we're like, you know, let's look at our community. Let's look at our church. And this is the church that we attend in Boise, Idaho. And it's just a little community church of about a few hundred people. And and Boise is a conservative city. It's very Republican. It's very it's slow to move. It loves its hunting. It loves its, you know, a lot of things. You know, its ease of life. But it also is big into hiking, skiing, biking. So in a way, we figured that this was a good place to test this. And so we approached our pastor, and he was open to it. And he's like, "Oh yeah, sure, go ahead. But I'm not sure what type of response you're going to get." And so we opened a Bible study in our home, which we called the Green Gospel, which we went over this. We tested these principles on those who did show up. And the funny thing is a lot of people in the study came from other churches. And as we started meeting, we started realizing that all these people felt like outcasts in their churches. And so they feel like, oh, this is a group that I can be myself. We can talk. We can throw ideas around. And we really bonded. And we decided, you know, we want to take this to the other churches. Right now we're in the process of developing a presentation to take to churches who are open, or just to come up a little, you know, slideshow or some sort of, you know, visual thing to take to the churches to do a blurb. But then also we started saying, you know, what we need outside help. And so then we started looking to what there was. And then we had been talking to a group called Arasha USA. It's an international organization, but it's also, they have one in the US. And we talked to them about starting one in Boise. And so then through that, the church started asking us to help with their activities. And then when they heard of our little group of Arasha that we started, they came to us, and this particular church did a day what they called Church Without Walls. They had gotten the idea from another church, and then they decided to do it in their church. So we closed the doors that day at church, and we went out to different parts of the city. And then, like, some people went to work with the migrant workers and did some work with them, threw them a fiesta. Some went to go plant in an urban garden. Some went and clean up on Table Rock, which is a mountain in Boise. And then we went and planted trees by an old mining community, which was allowing sediment and heat to go into the river. And so then we planted 500 trees that day. And we hooked up with an organization called Trout Unlimited, and they were so impressed with our group and how hard the church worked that when the event was over, they came back to our church and walked inside the doors and like, we have to see what's different about you guys. And then they never would have entered the church. I mean, they came to us just because we worked side by side with them. And that to me was a good example of how just getting out and getting dirty with people lets them see what's different. And there's plenty of people who want to get out and plant trees, but when there's still something different about us that they see that's different from the other people who are out there getting dirty with them. And so then, we hooked up with Boise Arasha, and I don't know if you could tell, but this is a storm drain. And we did different things, and you know, again, we're not the professionals. We don't have all the answers, but what we did is we looked at the organizations in our town, and we first were like, what's unique about Boise? And Boise has the river going through. It's a big fishing community, but we have a lot of problems with dams. We have a lot of mining, which is up north, which goes through our town. But then we have also the farmland, which is south of us, which is the poor part of the town, and also which is where all the phosphates from the farming is going into the water. And then the water that the migrant workers are drinking is the polluted water. So it's just kind of, it makes us realize, like, so we start saying, okay, the river is a focus that we need to focus on. And so then we contacted Trout Unlimited, Idaho Rivers United, and we just told them and said that, you know, we're Arasha. We are a Christian organization that wants to work with the environment, and how could we help you? And then they welcomed us with open arms. Everyone, especially with this economy, everyone's shorthanded and they need help. And so they're looking for volunteers. And so then they're the professionals. They know the problems. And so we just copied them. And when there's an event, they would contact me and I'd just send out an email blast, and you know, we try to raise people for them. And we did cool stuff. We went snowshoeing and we clipped cottonwoods to Trout Unlimited, and then the nursery rooted them, which we went back and planted later on. We hooked up with the Boise Watershed and we helped test the water to see the quality of the water. And then we hooked up with the city, which is this right here. And this, I don't know if you see that little circle on the top of the drain. We went and we marked storm drains because the water from the storm drain goes straight into the river. And it's just a little label that says, you know, remember the water, you know, don't dump. The water in here goes to the river. And kids went through all these things. We took our dogs, we took our kids, and we just had the best time. And it was fun. And then, it worked, the team bonded, and it was just a great way to kind of be a good witness to the community, too. And then so now it's kind of like, you know, we're moving forward. You know, what is there to do and what can you do now? And I know Santa Barbara, they have an Arasha chapter. And they're having this thing with it's called Creation Care Institute. And it's June 6th through 19th. And what they're doing is they're bringing students to Santa Barbara and they're going to teach them how to do this, how to raise money, how to find partners, how to work with your city. And it's just kind of like a how-to, because that was the problem we had. You know, we wanted to do something, but we did not know what to do. And so what Rich Dixon, what they're going to be doing is training people to do that on their own. And then it's the thing, and we look at books, you know, where Mark and I are writing a book now called The Green Gospel. And it's just kind of, you read, look what's out there, read what's out there, and just be educated. And then there's so many different things that you could read now, and there's so many websites, and and then allow God. We serve the God who created the world. He's the most creative thing there is. You know, just, you know, allow him to use you and to give you something new that, you know, that no one else has even thought of, or something for your area. So we'd like just to leave this with you and open up. You do have any questions?
Yeah, just click the next slide.
Oh, I'm sorry. You open it up to questions and answers. I know some of the stuff we said is nothing new, but the other stuff might have struck a nerve or idea, so. Does anybody have anything they'd like to ask?
I'm just wondering what happened when you did the surgery. Did you have appendicitis?
Yeah. Yeah, I did have appendicitis, and that's a whole other story, and it just totally shows how, like, God totally takes care of you, and it totally cured my mom of the fact of that when I was going overseas. She was like, you're going back for a second term, no way. But the cool thing, just in a nutshell, I had appendicitis. And And this was a very, very small hospital. And it was very archaic, but what happened was two American doctors who were in southern Russia happened to be in a hospital probably about 30 miles away, and someone told them about our hospital, and they were delivering equipment and antibiotics. And so someone told them about our hospital, and they're like, hey, while we're in the area, let's go check this hospital out. So they came, and part of the problem we had was my friend who was acting as an interpreter didn't know the medical terminology, and so they're saying, you know, we think it's appendicitis, but we don't know, we need to operate. And so that kind of scared my team leader, because he's like, don't do exploratory surgery, we want to know. And so they had a translator who could translate the medical terminology and say, this is just appendicitis, it's the most simple operation there is, if it's done in time. And so, yeah, and it was, you know, and actually we actually got to show the Jesus film and all that. It was really fun, it was a good week. All right, well, you know, actually, we're going to dismiss, but before we do, I would like to end this in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for who you are and what you have created and what you have shared with us and what you have given us and allowed us to enjoy and get to know you better through, Lord. And we just come before you, and I thank you for all these people who are in this room who are seeking how to better love and get to know you and serve you through creation and taking care of what you have given us and to love our neighbors and those who are being affected so much in harder and more serious situations because of our actions, Lord. And just help us to look and see what it is you have us to do and what you want us to do. And just give us the ideas of what's next. And then give us the wisdom to know what is true and what is not true. And just to be able to decipher what it is that your spirit is longing for us to do. And again, I thank you for each individual in this room. And I pray that you would just work in their heart and that your spirit would just work in their soul and just show them what their part is in this whole creation care, Lord. And we thank you and we praise you. And we ask that you just stay with each person here as they go to their next session, and just, that your glory will be shown. In your son's name we pray. Amen.